A world-renowned author, journalist, and lecturer, Gail Sheehy has changed the way women and men look at the stages of their lives. The Library of Congress named her revolutionary book, Passages, published in 1976, as one of the 10 most influential books of our times. Gail has written 17 books in all. 5 of these revisit the passage theme and explore the stages of adult life. In her work as a journalist, Gail has covered national and world leaders and broken many cultural taboos. She culminated a decade of following Hillary Clinton for Vanity Fair with the biography Hillary's Choice. She's written about the character and psychology of presidential candidates from Robert Kennedy to Barack Obama and world leaders from Margaret Thatcher to Saddam Hussein. Passing 70, Gail figured it was time to turn the lens on herself. She's written a memoir about her own passages. The book is called Daring, My Passages, and we're honored to speak with her about it today. Welcome, Gail. I'm thrilled to have you with us on the Book Report. It seems you knew your destiny from seventh grade on when you stole into Manhattan from the suburbs on Saturday mornings to observe and to write. Tell us about that.
Well, my grandmother and I used to listen to a radio show called Grand Central Station, and it was so exciting, and it talked about the crossroads of a million private lives. And I thought, I've got to get there. I mean, the suburbs doesn't have anything to write about. So I would sneak onto the train, or tell the ticket taker that I was going in for my tap dancing lessons, and I was a little tiny person, and I would just get to the end, and I'd climb up the steps to the balcony around the huge center and look at the crossroads of a million private lives, and I'd see a man in a slouched hat meet with a woman who had on dark glasses, and they would exchange words and then move apart, and I think, they must be communists. That was the height of the McCarthy hearing. So I had something to write about. I would scribble it on my little pad and go home and use the typewriter my grandmother bought me when I was 8 years old to write a story.
Were you on the school newspapers?
Yes, I was, the high school. And in college, I was more interested in acting, which ultimately stood me in good stead because my latest book, a memoir called Daring, is really about how to dream dangerously and act confidently. And learning how to act is very helpful for women because we don't feel as confident as men do. And you have to put on a confident face. That's what gets people excited about what you have to offer.
As is your writing style, you interview extensively before writing about your subject. You interviewed friends and colleagues before writing your memoir, Daring. What was that like for you?
Well, it was wonderful to go back to, you know, good times, even bad times, and sometimes discover they weren't as bad as I thought they were. But I also had diaries or daytimers, as they were called, calendars that I'd been keeping since the 1970s. And often being a writer, I would write on the side page a little dialogue, a little sketch of scene. So I had that to remember. Otherwise, I'm sure I wouldn't have been able to write it.
You wrote Gloria Steinem was the sister everybody would have loved to have. How so?
Gloria was always about helping other people and being a colleague. She used to travel in her early years always with an African-American woman to show that this was not, the women's movement was not in contradiction to the civil rights movement. It was actually just another aspect of it. And Gloria had taken care of her mother when she was a young girl, wasn't able even to go full-time school until she was 10 years old. And so she never wanted to marry because she didn't want to have to take care of a man. But she always had very close women friends.
I loved reading about Tom Wolfe's 1970 article, Radical Chic, chronicling the party at Leonard Bernstein's Park Avenue penthouse, where the Black Panthers were celebrated by Jason Robards, Stephen Sondheim, Mike Nichols, among others. It was, as you say, the first commentary on political correctness. What are your thoughts now on our country's slavish adherence to political correctness?
I think it's such a deterioration of our language, of our sense of freedom of speech. I certainly think that some people go too far, namely Donald Trump, using it to be beastie about other people, to demonize the other, so many others. Now it's Syrian refugees, before it was Mexicans. But I think that political correctness gets in the way of exactly what language is meant to do, which is meant to connect us with each other and help us to be empathetic to other people. And if we don't state the problem, we can't really talk about the solution if we are disturbed by people who are different than we are.
Let's talk about Passages, the book that took you 3 years to write and, you say, 37 years to live. How did the idea for that book come to you?
Well, it was a traumatic experience I had in Northern Ireland, where I was not expecting to be in the middle of Bloody Sunday, but suddenly I was, and a boy right next to me was shot in the face, and I was only 32 years old. I thought everything could be mended when I was that young, and it was too late to help him. People piled in us. We were like a caterpillar crawling up on an outdoor staircase to get into someplace safe, because the British Army was spraying the unarmed crowd with automatic rifle fire. It was one of the first of what has become the norm now in conflict zones. And when I came back to New York from that trauma, it took me 6 months for it to catch up with me. And then I began, some kind of inner voice began asking me questions that I found difficult to answer. You know, the arithmetic of life suddenly came to me. Half my life had already been spent. What, you know, didn't I want another child and another marriage since my first had ended? And then it would ask me again, well, is it enough to be writing magazine articles? What about, and books? What about doing something in the world? So I began looking at interviews that I had already done with couples in crisis, intending to write that book. And I began to see that among those 35 to 45, they were younger then, we've moved on since then, I had evidence of disequilibrium, the same kind of disappointment with where we'd been, even though it might have been the right place, a sense of time running out, a sense of urgency. And I came to call it, ultimately, midlife crisis. Nobody had used that term. And then I began to see that there were other predictable passages, as I came to call it, and that if we knew about them and knew that they were normal, we would be much better able to take advantage of them and stretch and grow, because that's how you grow, by changing. And so I wrote the book thinking it would sink without a trace, because I didn't have a degree as a psychologist. And the first review was by a very jealous man who was an editor at Time magazine. And so he wrote an unkind review, and I thought, well, that's it. It's over. And then people began to react to the book. And it was very interesting. The people brought the reviewers around. Then suddenly the reviewers' reviews became glowing, and it was off to the races.
We are speaking with Gail Sheehy on The Book Report. How would you counsel the baby boomer population who are heading into their 60s and beyond? What is their passage? How to improve their passage?
Well, I think the biggest passage for boomers, who are now almost mid-50s and already moving into their 70s, is to really think about how to give back. That is the main issue. What is really important at that time of life, when time is short? And I find that in most people, there is an urgency about making a difference, helping in whatever way you can to leave your little corner of the world a little better place. And most people are doing it. And that's one of the reasons that boomers are working longer and moving on to nonprofits or starting nonprofits so that they can make more of a difference. And I find that very encouraging. I actually have come up with a new phase. I call it the surge 60s. So many women in particular really surge in their 60s. They're totally free of responsibilities for other people. Their kids don't want to hear about what they should do. Their husbands are maybe retired, or maybe they don't, they've passed on. And they really have, you know, nothing much to lose by getting out there and saying what they truly believe in and trying to persuade other people to take their path.
Did having Margaret Mead as your professor impact your writing of Passages?
enormously. Dr. Mead told me, as a journalist, what I needed to do was whenever there was a major event, an assassination, an attack. We hadn't had terrorist attacks, but she would have said that about Ferguson. Drop everything. Get on a bus or a train or a plane. Get there. Stand at the edge of the abyss. Look down, and you will see your culture turn inside out.
Anyone who reads Daring has to be insanely jealous of the people you've met along the way, the friends that you've made. Will you share a memory from your newsroom days?
From my newsroom?
Mm-hmm.
The first friend I made who became my mentor and later my husband was Clay Felker. I was sequestered in the women's department of the New York Herald Tribune on the fourth floor, not allowed to cross into the testosterone zone, the newsroom, in the late 1960s. That's where women had to stay. But I snuck down the back stairs so my editor wouldn't catch me to pitch a story to Clay Felker. I was scared to death. And he looked up and he said, "Where did you come from?" And I said, "The estrogen zone." Well, that connected with him, and he said, "Come on in. What do you got for me?" And so I had 10 seconds to pitch a story, and I pitched this crazy story. And he said, "Great. We'll call it the Flypaper People. Just write it like you told it to me. Write it as a scene." Well, write journalism as a scene? I mean, up to then, journalism had been who, what, when, where, why, very dry. And he was asking me to jump off, take a leap into a new kind of writing, which became known as the new journalism. So I was so fortunate to get in on the ground floor, along with Tom Wolfe and Jimmy Breslin and lots of other wonderful writers.
You've written extensively about Hillary Clinton. What are your thoughts about her current presidential campaign?
Hillary Clinton never ceases to fascinate me. I wrote a biography of her. I covered her for 10 years for the Vanity Fair. And I find now that there is some ambivalence around Hillary, particularly by her own peers. The age group in their early 50s to 70, they are less enthusiastic about her than women 18 to 45. So it's wonderful that she's getting younger women, but it's telling that the older women have problems that they can hardly articulate about her. And she's got to win them over because they will be one-fifth of the voters in 2016 will be boomer women. One-fifth.
Well, Gail, I loved the book. I encourage everyone to go out, read it. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Elaine. Thank you.